Olympics.
Fucking Olympics, man.
No!
You're robbing a
stolen land. Fuck. No Olympics, a stolen native land. No 2010, no, no 2010. No Olympics, a stolen native land. No 2010, no, no 2010.
Coming back from a protest against the torture-related kickoff in Victoria, Jeanette, Wednesday, and Mark wanted to share their perspectives and their critics about their experience there and about the resistance to the Olympics and beyond, some of their reflections about strategies, how to organize efficiently in our struggles in our communities, also in reaction to many activists for who the disruption of the torch relay was a victory.
The darkest of night descends an innocent life, and the slash of chainsaw saw the land for a price. People all around the globe need to know the sour taste of the crops of the seeds they sow. A stone's throw from a gentric genocide, a blatant show of the blindness money can buy. Though many can try to live in alignment with lies, we refuse to retreat, we will not run to hide. We won't go out without a fight, our silence can't be bought. Look at the impact that a shoe swap, the fight that they fought. No Olympics, a stolen native land.
The guy that did the interview last week for Olympic Resistance Radio in preparation for the resistance to the torch relay kickoff in Victoria. I guess I'm here doing somewhat of a report back. I think in like my first interview I was like feeling the vibes of preparations to an event and having all these hopes that may or may not come true about how where it could lead and what could happen. I think like still many of those questions are there. I don't believe in Victoria there is as much of an effect upon the torch relay as there could have been. There was, in fact, a march of 300 people that managed to cause the torch itself to change its route, which is positive for sure, in considering what type of march it was, how it was organized and everything. Something that you don't usually find in Vancouver that I saw in Victoria was that people who were just walking by on the streets and saw the march go by were joining up. So, like, the march was much smaller at the very beginning. But maybe not much, much smaller, but it was definitely smaller at the very beginning of the march. It grew in size as it went on. Like, people joined into the march as it went through the city. Something good to see. One of the reasons why I don't think it went as well as it could, and this isn't a discouragement or necessarily an admission of defeat, but there was a very much a feeling of fear in the streets and in many people involved in that due to the police presence. And that fear and that paranoia, it was found to be very difficult for people to see beyond that and to actually reach out for their comrades in the ways that they could have. I mean, that was one of my bases for how we could potentially stop the spectacle and attack the spectacle of the Olympics and the torch relay kickoff and the torch relay itself, was that we would be there for our comrades. A lot of that didn't happen due to like psychological pressures of the police state that was going on. There was lots of military helicopters, police in the streets everywhere, undercovers following lots of people. One woman who was on her way out to the torch relay kickoff on the ferry was arrested and charged with assault of an undercover cop who she was very frustrated with there, which like off the bat, if you want to doubt me whether there were actually police following people, that right there says it. So yeah, like a pretty heavy police presence, a pretty heavy militarized police threat. I don't want that to be a discouragement as the torch continues to go around, and I don't want that to be a discouragement in general for resistance to the Olympics. I think it's just very important that we keep in mind that we are comrades, and that although the paranoia and the fear is very due, it's important that we see beyond it and we look to our comrades, and we don't get caught up in our own like psychological paranoia, our own little cliques, and be afraid to trust others within the resistance.
How would you feel that for other communities that the torch will be going through could take from this first lighting of the torch? Like, how do you feel that this first kickoff will affect the advantages of resistance that other communities can take hold of as it passes through in the next 100 days?
Well, they can see that mass mobilizations will at least affect where the torch goes. It will cause it to... I think we also saw that with the Turin Olympics. They were actually able to surround the torch, do land occupations that caused the torch to divert its route. And perhaps that could even step up to actually stopping the torch. Who knows? I really can't say what type of resources, situation, layout of the city, how close people are with their comrades in other places. So I can't really say for sure. I can't really say like what type of direct example there would be from Victoria as it goes through to other people's communities. I can't say that there's really necessarily a direct correlation. It could be a very different scenario.
I feel like there was other factors than the huge police presence that broke or, you know, fucked the solidarity between people.
I think the main factor is that a lot of people are still just getting used to resisting in larger numbers than they have in the past. And so that it was found very difficult for people to bring themselves beyond what they were used to. I think the main thing all comes down to that people were just very easily scared, I think. I have reason to believe that may not happen again, but we will see. I don't know. I'd like to think that it'll never happen again, but I can't say for sure.
What do you think about the people calling this a victory for the activists against the Olympics?
People that organized their own demo, a march, and perhaps didn't expect that large of numbers to turn up. It's difficult to say what they expected. I mean, I think it all comes out to people's expectations. They had an idea of where the torch was going, and they went to block those intersections, and they succeeded. And so I can see for them, on those terms, it was very much a victory in that very moment. It's just up to what people's expectations are, and people that have other expectations, or maybe had other expectations, weren't able to succeed the same way. And so maybe other people don't think of it as quite the same victory.
Do you feel like with the people that have a common shared like sentiment after about it being like a failure to some degree, who weren't necessarily collaborating with having the disruption be around like blocking intersections and so on and so forth, do you feel like people feel the need to organize outside of this after to create more of a solidarity going into it next time with more force?
I think that's like really a long-term project. And I was hoping that maybe attacking the symbolic event in other ways than what we're used to could bring things in that direction. And so we still have yet to see. I mean, that event was very much its own like 3-day supposed convergence, the 29th to the 31st, with its international call out, and it was all in Victoria. All the plans were in Victoria. So I mean, there's still lots of time to see these other examples of decentralized action and action more in solidarity rather than typical anti-summit type of action that we see. I feel that like when February comes around, we will still be lacking a lot. What we are lacking is just changing away from the anti-summit mode of resistance to more local effects on our communities and be able to draw resistance that way, like maybe you see in other places in the world. But for February 2010, I think myself and many, 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 many other people, anyone who may or may not have been involved in that Victoria convergence, probably has a much better idea of just what the hell we're looking at here.
What type of consequences about how to organize? directly the struggle can be think from this experience.
How to organize the struggle is gotta move beyond these anti-summit type of actions. But I think for these anti-summit type of actions, and in general, we need not to fear so much. Have more trust and care for each other. That's one important lesson that I take from this. And I also have a more detailed vision of what that looks like. I can't speak for other people, though. Mm-hmm. One thing that I did like to see, though, was that there was people, in spite of the fact that we were surrounded by a large number of cops, highly visible, and in spite of the fact that there were police all over the place and there's all this hype about anti-Olympic terrorists and blah, 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 all that type of propaganda, in spite of all that, you found people just seeing the march going by and saying, yeah, I'm going to fucking spend the next couple hours with those people. Just spontaneously. That was something I was glad to see. I think that's an important thing to take note of.
How do you feel about the fact that this event was around Halloween, therefore people were costumed? Like, do you feel that it had an effect, that there was already, like, people in costume? Do you feel that it created more paranoia because you didn't necessarily know who was around you? Do you feel it created more room so that less people were susceptible to police oppression or police visibility? How did you live that?
I think on one hand, for some people coming at it from a more direct form of resistance, people that have maybe more experience and more understanding of direct anti-capitalist resistance, there was definitely that paranoia, like you didn't know who the hell had that mask over there, how they got it and whatnot. I also think that there was a lot of people with a lot of different masks and a lot of just random people that showed up with bandanas on their faces. Although this is very symbolic and very, like, superficial, it was like a tippy toe in the direction of a less, like, pacifist acceptability of what it is to disrupt the capitalist mechanisms.
Is there anything else you feel like you want to share about this experience or let anybody else know that maybe wasn't to say there or people that were there?
I can say for sure that the cops definitely didn't know or have anywhere near as much control over the situation as people believed in themselves. And it's like so important to realize they don't fucking know everything. They can't fucking do everything. Police entered the march in mass. Well, maybe not in mass, but like a pretty good chunk of them were able to enter the march due to the fact that everyone was just so scared of these all-powerful policemen with their guns. The fact is they weren't riot cops. They didn't have their gear. They were fairly ill-prepared, as far as I could tell, and they're not going to whip out their gun in the middle of a crowd like that. I mean, yeah, it's just one, like one situation, one little example, but it took people way too long to figure out and to gain the strength to actually force those police out of the march. And just, like, don't give the fucking pigs too much fucking credit. Like, what would be the point in attacking the state and capitalism? What would be the point in doing actions in resistance to the Olympics if they were so powerful? There just wouldn't be, and they aren't. We need to keep fighting. And we can't afford to be afraid.
Yeah. I just wonder as well, in regards to, like, seeing the police presence, and a lot of people, I felt, were expressing that, like, a lot of this was on their base, that the constraints were confined to, with the people being in solidarity or having fear amongst each other. So I wonder where the place of the legal advisors. Like, how did you feel about their presence? Because police didn't have badges, and there were people like David Eby or other people who were like looking out and taking down their descriptions and stuff. Did you feel that was an important role in the protests?
The role of the BC Civil Liberties Association?
Yeah, and the legal advisors.
I think when it's like a mass demonstration that, like, had been planned, I don't know, it's difficult to say whether that played much of a role. You could also say what also played a role was the fact that it was, like, definitely over half white people. That certainly, whether you had BCCLA there or not, would have played a huge factor into how the police cracked down upon it. Maybe that's a little cut and dry in terms of, like, what may or may not have happened. I don't want to say for sure that it was a bunch of professional legal advisors that dictated what the police presence was. We can't rely on legal means.
I think also, like, consider the fact that the police don't know everything, but also, like, increase the level of strategy planning of mm-hmm. our actions.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, never always going to the same place where they still looking at us and they are, like, there and, like, many places exist mm-hmm. on the road.
Yeah,
that
no,
they
I
cannot
mean,
control every...
No, I mean, no, that is very true. That is a very good point. But I also want to throw out there that there was still plenty of chances within that place, that high, that police state that we had in fucking Victoria there, that we have every fucking day. We don't have to go out to the fucking bush to talk. We don't have to go out to the bush to fucking do an action. There is fucking cracks right there in that fucking heavy, saturated police state.
More into it, like a material or an actual place too, is do people want to meet on a basis that this is just a pretext? Like you said, it's not the war, it's a battle. So like how in that would people make the links with the environment around them and the environments within in their relationships to carry it outside of just that one place too?
With the demo and with everything, there was like that great fear and paranoia that put a strain on people's relationships to one another. Even, you know, like pretty solid comrades. But enough of a strain. And not a great strain, but enough of a strain. And we see that in our daily lives. I can't pretend to have the answers as to how to go beyond that, but I don't know, something people gotta keep trying.
Wreak havoc, beat this mad traffic, sleek and lavish, people speak and leak it to the maverick. He see it as just another felony drug arrest. Any day could be the one he picked the wrong thug to test. Slug through the vest, shot in the street for pulling heat on a father who babies gotta eat. And when they get hungry, it ain't shit funny. Paid to interfere with how brother get his money now. Who's the real thugs, killers and gangsters? Set the revolution, let the things bust and thank us. When the smoke clear and you can see the sky again, there will be the chopped off heads of Leviathan. My friend, you call them strangers. Anybody talk to them, end up in some danger. Can't reform them. They pray four times a day, they pray five. Who weighs the strange when it's time to survive? Some will go of their own free will to die. Others take them with you when they blow sky high. What's the difference? All you get is lost children while the bosses sit up behind the desk. It costs billions to blast humans in half into calves and arms. Only one side is allowed to have bombs. It's like making a soldier drop his weapon, shooting them and telling them to get to stepping. Obviously, they came to portion up his fortune. Sounds to me like that old robbery extortion. Same game, you can't reform them.
That Mary was going around with an old flame. That burned me up, because I knew he was just beating her alive. But the guy really spent his money like water. I think he was connected, so I left. Outside it was raining cats and dogs. I was feeling mighty blue, and everything looked black, but I carried on.
Just wondering if you guys wanted to talk a bit about your experience of the kickoff torch rally, which happened in Victoria on the 30th, and just let us know how it was for you guys. Let us know what happened as far as protest, as far as like what was the resistance or how you measured the resistance out there.
Yeah, sure. For me, it was both a disappointing experience and an inspiring one in ways, because I did learn from it. It wasn't what I expected, and so I was disappointed in that sense. Things that I hadn't expected ended up inspiring me in ways. For example, I did expect police repression, not to this extent. During the protest, like dozens of police officers were literally in the march, you know, they invaded the march almost. Policemen, both in undercover and in uniform, following specific people and dividing groups of people, and then, you know, really targeting certain individuals, harassing them. At any point, if they saw, well, certain specific things got their attentions, right? Bags, bulges, certain type of like clothing, people who wore masks were obviously targeted. That's one of the things I would have expected. I would have expected for a Halloween march that the majority of people there would be masked, and therefore that it would put less heat on the people, on people who were masked, you know. That the heat would be distributed more equally between everyone there. But that was not the case. Most people were not masked at all. So the ones who were definitely targeted. You would see, you know, a police officer come up to them, look up and down, you know, look at their shoes and describe in their microphone or whatever what they were wearing, you know. Like, outright asking them to empty their pockets or asking them what they had with them. Different people, you know, people who were like organizers got followed before the march. One guy I spoke to was followed the whole morning for like hours. He walked around and they were always there following him. And so for a lot of people, that was pretty, you know, intimidating. And I think there was a lot of paranoia in general throughout the march, which means both good things and bad things. Good things, like people were aware of the police infiltration, were aware of the police presence, and therefore you heard a lot of people on their microphones screaming, like throughout the whole march, screaming, "Police are trying to infiltrate the march, like let's keep them out, let's stay together, let's stay close, stay with your friends, watch for your friends." So lots of like messages of staying together. And I think for a lot of people who are not used to going to marches, it was very informative, you know, to be in that context and to have to learn to like show solidarity with everyone. But the paranoia also was negative in other ways. For instance, someone was telling me that they assumed that certain people who were wearing masks were agents provocateurs, agent provocateurs, whatever. And I think if that hadn't been that paranoia of police infiltration, then they wouldn't have assumed that. But because they did assume that, then there was less solidarity, right? Because you don't want to be solidar with people you think are infiltrators. So that's one thing.
I feel like this march was a pretty good test on both sides. I feel like the police from the Vancouver Police Department that went there, they brought some RCMPs on horses from Vancouver, which were forced to quit the march because somebody threw some marbles down, or some people, I don't know, they threw some marble down the ground. The horses were forced to retreat. I feel, yeah, it was a test on both sides to see how many people were there to protest against the Olympics, against the torch rally. I saw some people that were on the streets in a residential area waiting for the torch to pass, and some of them, they seemed just to like be waiting for a spectacle. Like some people were like really angry that we were disrupting the route of the torch, but some of the people cheered us. They seemed like they just wanted to see a spectacle. And like with the big salmon, that was a big, some people had like a lot of banners, just like a more festive side of the march, which was probably attractive for some people. I guess it was a little bit of a deception to see like the lack of anger that was like within the crowd. Most of the people were there, and some people were just like happy to be marching and protesting against the Olympic, but not so much showing like anger or threat, you know, being ready to.
You looking necessarily get arrested during the march. I know if some people get arrested before the march, being accused of like assault on the PO, getting out of the ferry, were accused of like throwing water on an undercover agent. They were not able to be at the march because of that. And other people like got followed during the day before the march. And some other get their bags searched, just getting out of the places where they were staying and searched and everything. And if they had like anything more or less suspicious, got taken away from them. Basic intimidation, like move from the police officers to make sure that nothing would happen during the march.
I've heard a lot of people say that the torch protest was a success because it effectively disrupted the torch route. For myself, anyways, like, if that was the case, I didn't notice. Like, we were so removed from what was actually happening with the torch relay. We were so far most of the time, and we had been, you know, the march started 4 hours before it was supposed or meant to meet the torch relay. So by that time, people were exhausted. We were so, like, surrounded all the time that it was really hard to see where we were at, where we, like, especially for people from outside of town. It was really hard to know what we were doing, what effect we were having. And, yeah, there were, like, certain, at different points, it was, like, announced, I think, on, like, a microphone, oh, yes, we have disrupted, or the torch relay is late, blah, blah, blah. But there was so much noise, so much music that myself, I didn't hear that, you know? So at the end, we got to the legislature where the big ceremony was going on, and all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, where am I? I have no clue, and all of a sudden I get scared because I see that we're even more surrounded with police, so I decided to leave, and at that point I had no clue what we had done yet, you know? So I feel like, sure, it was a success on a, you know, maybe on a mediatic level it was a success, or official, you know? Officially it was a success. But for people in the march, I don't see how that was. I don't feel like personally I disrupted the march. We were so far removed from that. So in that way, I felt disappointed, you know? I felt disempowered, personally.
Yeah, I would have expected the protesters to have, like, meet the torch, and, like, I was kind of waiting for, like, people to, like, you know, run with the runners, like, which I hope is going to happen, like, in other places where the torch is just, like, going across through Canada. Because, like, in Victoria, the torch was there for, like, 12 hours. The organizers decided that the protests would happen when the torch was, like, going back to the legislature, because it arrived at, like, 9 in the morning. By that time, yeah, the torch just got protected or taken away or whatever it is. Like, I just hope that people are going to be resisting that spectacle across Canada and just, like, showing their opposition to Olympics. I know that this is only, like, a symbolic protest, but I feel like symbolism can be, like, pretty strong, especially, like, in the media, like, through Canada, because, like, a lot of people are going to be following the torch on the media and on TV. If people can just know that there is, like, pretty intense resistance against the Olympics, maybe they're going to think a little more about, like, what are the impacts of the Olympics, like, here in Vancouver and, like around the world, like in China, like, seeing the intense violation of human rights and killings that happened there. I feel like a lot of people took another look at what are actually, like, the Olympics, how much is, like, intertwined with government power and, like, corporations. Yeah.
I think we can learn a lot from this. Because I'm sure we're going to have, you know, this is just the start of, like, protesting against, like, or more, like, I can't say.
Like, you mean protesting, like, against the Olympics? Like, it was, yeah, like, one of the first events that happened, like, since Vanek decided to, it's the first event that's been, like, that happened outside since Vanek decided, like, not to have any, like, public events for, like, months. Like, every event has been, like, hold inside, because, like, there was, like, too much resistance against the Olympics, and we're, like, protesters sometimes would be, like, over numbering, you know, the amount of people that were just, like, there to assist, like, the
clock unveiling ceremony.
For example.
Okay, I think we can learn a lot from our weaknesses in terms of, like, learning how to keep cops away from the protest. I think that's really important. I think, like, that we know, like, what we're going to focus on more next time. To even just giving workshops to people about, like, how, like, a normal protest unrolls and, like, what are certain precautions to take and how to just have each other's backs even more. And I think we can learn a lot from that, and hopefully by the Olympics we will have had time to address those things and, yeah, and just inform people of that, of what we learned from this tour really.
And I guess also, like, learning about, like, different police tactics that are, like, can very likely happen in protests, and just, like, being prepared for it, not to be, like, surprised about it, and just, like, knowing what to do and staying calm and staying together. Mm. Yeah.
Kickoff in Victoria on the 30th?
Yeah, so I was really excited about the Torch Relay, actually, given the fact that it's kind of the, you know, beginning of the end, as I like to think of it, regarding the Olympics. You know, there'd been a good vibe about organizing in terms of, it seemed like there was a lot of people that were coming together for this, and it was definitely a way, or it seemed like an opportunity at the time to make a mark and get some voices out, to kind of parallel a lot of the hype that's been happening surrounding the Olympics lately, especially given the fact that the way that it's been put in the media, like this rallying cry around, like, the enterprise that is the Olympics, it's just been so overwhelming. You know, it's really rare, I think, that people have been looking and examining at it for really what it is and what it brings, like, beyond the superficial veneer of, you know, sports and games. So it was actually really nice to see that people were looking to make their voices heard in non-bullshit propagandist way, like a, and hopefully like a kind of confronting the realities and facing the realities of the Olympics, which was refreshing, especially given the fact that, like, it's just like just the hype around it, like all the papers, all the postering, like all of the media push-ups and corporate high-fiving that's been happening lately. It seemed like people were organizing to let the other side know, like, you know, the other side and the realities of it be known. So I was excited about that. Where there was, like, a decent showing of people, especially for an island like Victoria, like, you know, where it actually takes, like, money and effort to get out there. It's not super accessible like Vancouver is in that way. It definitely requires some means and some ends to get there, which I thought was reassuring to have that many people out in that way. It was not necessarily what I'd expected. There was some events organized by, what would I call them? Like, I guess, like there was, like, an anti-Olympic kind of convergence that happened. You know, the media estimated it between, like, 200 and 450 people. They constantly underestimate, so, you know, to say, like, 300 was there, like, that's a, for me, for something like that, I think that's a decent showing for that kind of event. And a lot of people have been, like, calling it, like, you know, Victory in Victoria, you know, like a, hallmarking it as, like, this great success, you know, because the torch was diverted, and, you know, that has its positives and negatives, right? Like, I would concur, I would say that it was a success for those people whose goals was to divert the torch, I guess, because it did have to go around, it did have to reroute itself, but I find that if you set your bar low, then it's super easy to succeed, right? If your bar is having something move around, you know, but still be successful on its campaign, well, then congratulations, you've made it. But if your recognition of a struggle or if your recognition of the Olympics goes beyond merely having people pass that torch hand to hand in an impromptu ceremony, then you can look at it as essentially a failure, which is, I think, how I kind of look at it and how I felt about it, in a way that the action was not a success for accomplishing anything more than a quick divertisement of an already planned route. No, like, if you look at the long-term implications of that, where are you going to go? What's the result of that for your struggle, or for raising awareness, or for putting people together on the map and saying, like, you know, like a lot of the stuff that's happening around the Olympics is right. Moving the torch around doesn't necessarily achieve any kind of end goal or accomplish anything greater. It's just, it's like another small pebble being thrown out a window that never really accomplishes a smashing glass, right? Like, it's just, you can do that over and over again. I think, like, a lot of people discuss this before, and I've had this discussion with other people, but if you keep making these teensy-tiny little goals, you know, considering something like this to be a huge victory, what's the after-effect of your victory? Like, are you really making your mark somewhere? Are you affecting the kind of change that you want to affect? Or are you just, like, a little stone in someone's shoe that they're more like, you know, it's a small irritant, and at the end of the day, they just keep walking on over you, like, you know, they get it done, and it's nothing different than it was before, you know? Like, the torch is still going. The media that they got from it was self-congratulatory, and there was, like, a lot of, you know, hand-slapping, back-slapping, and high-fiving about it, but the spectacles will still continue. The corporate interests are still going to kind of progress and push further. Like, there was no repercussions for them at all. There was no kind of impetus to change the situation in terms of what's going to happen or how it's going. It's like you're dealing with a failed game at that point in time. And yeah, it's frustrating on that level. It's incredibly frustrating. If you look at the impacts on the Olympics on not just like Vancouver, but if you look at the ties to the environmental degradation, if you look at like the RFC's hands in the tar sands, or you know the fact that Phil Fontaine has now been brought on as an Aboriginal advisor to kind of like smooth their way into different venues. If you look at the crackdown on civil liberties, like, you know, you can't go to Pigeon Park anymore, you can't go to Oppenheimer Park anymore. You know, these open spaces that are supposed to be used for the community are completely being locked down, and people are being swept under the carpet. The Golden Crown's being, like, you know, was evicted the other day, and you know, people are really actually suffering the effects of the Olympics. If you look at, like, the structure, you know, like, all these, like, insidious ways that the Olympics are making their mark on the city, right? There's been, like, a serious war against, an actual war against the Olympics and the government in terms to be, like, you know, these undesirable areas of town and these, like, undesirable people and these undesirable practices. And all the Olympics has really done is pave the way for people to make this happen super insidiously, passing these bylaws, you know, like, affecting this police state with repercussions that are going to have a long-term effect long after the games are done, like, long after those medals have been handed out and the streets have been, like, you know, swept, this place has been cleaned up, all for, like, the pretense of being, like, this perfect city, you know, during this perfect time for these beautiful games that are supposed to happen. It's absolutely obscene. And if our action, if our countenance for that is to divert a torch, if that's how we're going to make our mark, then we failed, you know? Because what's that say for the level of care that we give to the people who live here? It's remarkably shallow. And it kind of reifies the stratification that we have in the city, like, you know, between these two classes, because nobody's sitting here arguing for people who aren't able to walk outside at night without facing oppression by the police, who aren't facing, like, inquisitions and basically knocks on doors for organizing, which is what we should be doing in the first place. But people are getting pissed off when, you know, they can't drive their car right down the street into work. Like, it's just, nobody seems to be really stepping up for people who aren't able to step up for themselves or who are being trodden over by these interests. And it's really depressing to see that, you know, you call it victory in Victoria, but it's all it is like clearing a small passageway for a greater commodification of the land and a greater commodification of the people who are here. And it's really frustrating if people think that that's the best that they can do, is standing in a square, you know, spending a lot of time on resources to make costumes and spectacles, when you return back to your home at the end of the day and your status quo continues to move on. You know, the Olympics continues to progress. These corporations continue to make a shit ton of money off the backs of everyone else. The government continues to enact these ridiculous bylaws and legislations that are clearing people of their rights and of their absolute fundamental liberties in the streets. And there's like a very minimal level of care and a very minimal level of protest. Yeah, like, and it's true. Like, if you just want to be the pebble in the shoe, then congratulations, it's been accomplished. But at the end of the day, you pretty much have let them do exactly what they wanted to do without any resistance whatsoever. And it was surprising to see that low level of resistance. It's great to have people out, and it is reassuring to see that there is a level of support. But if your level of support is going to be so tepid, you might as well just roll over and take it anyways, because that's essentially what you're doing, with a pat on the back because you came out and did a march at the end of the day. Yeah, that's a huge frustration for me to see that.
And also, when the people call this kind of action a victory, they not necessarily find or search for other tactics or strategy will be more effective to stop the consequences, all the consequences you still talk and other
ones
that continue to exist.
It's very true.
With the Olympics or without the Olympics, anyway.
If you find this to be a victory, if you find that you have actually made some van carrying a torch and 10 runners to be like your great action and your great movement, you're completely ignoring the big picture. And what you're really doing, you're doing something that you feel good about, that when you go home at night, you're like, oh great, I fucking did it. Like, we made somebody go around us. Big fucking deal. You know, because the legacy that the Olympics is going to leave is more than just that. You know, it's long term. It's invasive. It's invasive. It's completely self-laudatory. And the action of diverting a torch does nothing in the long run. It's a drop of water in a stream that's already running. And there's no damming it at this point. But if you're sitting there and you're happy with what you did, and like that's your big action, that's your big resistance, you need to really look at what you're doing, and you need to really like look up at like what your struggle is, because it means that you don't fucking know and you don't give a shit, because you're allowing it to continue and you're allowing it to go on. And the Olympics is so much more than just like those 2 weeks of games or this fucking torch, right? Like, this thing is like an umbrella for all of these, like capitalist infrastructure, you know, for state domination, for corporate interests being completely fed, and they all feed into each other. And to allow that system to continue and to allow that system to take root in your city, in your country, is absolutely unacceptable. The problem is, like, when I look at it, it's that not enough people feel like that influences them. They're more than happy to allow it to take place and to root as long as it doesn't come and shit on their doorstep. But they're not the ones that are sitting there, you know, having their public spaces that they used to go to be shut down. They're not the ones that are looking at their rental apartments, you know, being kicked out or being moved over. They're not the ones that are having to make room for new condos. They're the ones that are buying the condos. You know, they're the ones that are okay with this because they work for these corporations. They're the ones that, you know, feed off the system and feed into the system. And that's not a resistance. The other problem with the idea of like a struggle, and this idea of a struggle, is that we've been repeating the same tactics for 10 years. You know, like, Seattle came up and Seattle's done, but we have not moved on, we've not progressed from it. Like, we've taken those lessons and we've just repeated them over and over and over again. We keep diving into the same bags of old tricks that get us nowhere. If you look at the status quo then, and if you look at it now, nothing has changed. If anything, it's become worse, because these kind of insidious faculties have taken greater hold in our society, and they started to expound, and they started to run roughshod over everybody. And if you look at the way that the Olympics has taken over this city, we've allowed it to happen. And it's not that we've already lost, but we've allowed it to take such serious root that it's going to take a lot of digging to get that weed out of the garden. A ton of digging to get that weed out of the garden. And if we keep repeating with old tactics and old ways and taking these minor, like, quote-unquote victories as being something that is like a sea change for some sort of greater movement, it's not. It's temporary and it's stationary. It doesn't move beyond that day in Victoria, and it won't until people start recognizing that it is greater than just this, and it's greater than just a fucking torch, and it's greater than actually, you know, being able to go out and march around for a couple hours and then go home and do the exact same shit that you've been doing every single day. And that, to me, is depressing. because nobody seems to recognize that, and because nobody seems to like actually pick up their bootstraps and say, like, we are at war in this way, you know, and what are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to do the exact same fucking thing that we've been doing for the last 10 years, which is nothing, and there's been no progress in that way. Yeah, it's great that a lot of people went out to Victoria, and it's great that people were able to mobilize and to look at the structures of oppression and to bring it to other people's doorsteps and to try and get other people out in that way. And it's great that, you know, we were able to like bang pots and pans and walk around like unhindered, you know, in our free speech area, which apparently was everywhere, I guess, but or be corralled into some sort of cage at the end of the day. But what did it accomplish? Long term? Nothing. It didn't move anybody forward in the struggle. It didn't move anybody forward in terms of like being able to change the balance of power. It didn't make any kind of lasting and progressive action. It was a one-off. And if we keep being satisfied with these one-offs, then we're gonna keep trading shots with them shot for shot every single time that this happens. And we're gonna be exactly the same place where we are now, which is nowhere. You know, the torch has been going for 4 or 5 days now, and what's happened? Nothing. The whole entire thing just keeps continuing, you know? And we're getting closer and closer to the Olympics, and no one's really thinking about what we're gonna do with it after. You know, Vanoff's got a $30 million bonus. 30 million bucks. There are organizations in the city that don't get that much money to house people. You know, and like we're fucking spending this money on a 12, 14 day party. And what do we get out of it? We receive hundreds of security cameras in the downtown core. We receive, I think it's like the last number I read was like 14,000 military officers who are coming down to keep the city on lockdown. We're gonna have twice as many military people here as we do in Afghanistan right now. That's fucked up.
You have an idea what we can like do outside of those like demonstration or displacement end of the torture
or the negligent reactionary politics in the way of the last 10 years that repeat. Like as well extension of what you say, like do you think there's room in this like rotting fucking reactionary politics that are existing right now to reinvent strategy?
Of strategy takes nothing more than like creativity and the wherewithal to get it together and to actually make a sacrifice for something. And I think that that's another thing that like people don't do often enough. Like, you know, that people are not willing to sacrifice their own shit for the bigger picture. And I think that that's something that really was reiterated to me in Victoria, because people weren't willing to put their own personal stuff aside in order to do something for the greater struggle. And I think it takes like a bit of organizing, but creativity, because this bag of tactics that we have, we've been using it over and over again. And everyone knows what there is. Like, we pull out the same shit every time. And there's been nothing new that's been coming up, and we keep hitting the same brick wall. So I don't particularly feel comfortable discussing my ideas about that kind of stuff, but what I do think is that the time is right for it, and the climate's ready, and I think that there's a need to examine the structures that we're working under and say, okay, the things that we've been doing have been getting us nowhere. So let's look outside this grab bag of tactics that we have, this old bag, this old hat, and put on some new clothes and do it different. It's not impossible, but but that's why it's a struggle. You know, that's why it is resistance, and that's why if you so feel that it's necessary, then you should be ready to come up and make it necessary, like make that your imperative. And I don't think enough people are willing to do that. And I think that people have to look at it like in the bigger scheme, right? Like, yeah, it's a couple weeks, but it's a couple weeks with a long-term impact. It's greater than that, you know? It's the idea that you can have this, like, small elite entity come in and overtake and supersede and usurp so many resources and so much of your abilities and so much of your power in order to get their shit done without any regard for anybody that they have to trample over. And we allow that to happen. I think that's a sick state of the world. We're basically ushering them in. And I think that that's what happened in Victoria. We basically said, like, yeah, we're here, but we're not going to be a problem. We'll let you come in. We might picket, you know, we might shout. We might get in your way a little. But at the end of the day, you hold the power, and we let them hold the power in that way. And if you come at it like that, if you don't think that you have the ability, then you're going to be satisfied with your victory in Victoria. And for you, that's going to be the highlight of, you know, of your resistance. And for me, that's kind of unacceptable.
In that situation, what inspired you?
Oh, that's a really good question. What really inspired me was seeing other individuals who have, in the past, not allowed that kind of complacency, or not allowed that kind of low-level satisfaction with low-level achievements. Like, people who actually feel like that change is possible instead of feeling so tired about repeating the same stuff. Or people who have a true solidarity with struggles that are theirs or may not be theirs, and feel like it's worth giving up their time and their efforts and to make their sacrifices on behalf of that struggle. And I think that that's actually the most inspiring part, is that there have been gains made, you know, around the world with struggles, but they've always been gains that have come often from, like, a real us versus them mentality instead of us and them, you know, in the same place. And this, like, acknowledgement that we can't always exist in the same space, you know, and this acknowledgement that it is an acknowledgement that it is a war, in the way that there's no compromise and there is no abetting with the enemy, and that there is no room for a half step, that it's got to be complete and it's got to be whole, and you have to give yourself entirely to it. And that, I think the thing that I find often inspiring is that when you're looking at a sea of, like, you know, 300 or 3,000 or, you know, 300,000 people, when you see people who are there for the same reasons you are, and they're like a glimmer in a sea of shit, you know? And you see people that are, like, willing to really get into it and really get into what they're doing because they feel like that it is, like, a total all-encompassing struggle, and they're not satisfied with doing a half-assed job because they realize that doing a half-assed job is conceding defeat. I felt like there were a lot of concessions in Victoria, and I feel like if you want to make a concession, then maybe you're in the wrong place, because that's not what it's about. And there is no room for making compromises, and there is no room for concessions. There has to be a recognition about how over-encompassing these kind of structures are, and that the longer we let them sit and the longer that we let them fester, the more we allow them to take root, the harder it's going to be to extract ourselves from those institutions, from those faculties. Like, an acknowledgement of the importance of it, instead of just saying, like, well, this is all I can do. This is all I have. Yeah.
To get in contact with us, you can write at vanrad@hotmail.com.
2 or 3 years ago, this wouldn't have been done. Two or three years ago, most of our people would choose to sing about someone who was, you know, passive and meek and humble and forgiving. And I say it with no anger, but I say it with very careful forethought. The language that you and I have been speaking to this man with in the past hasn't reached him. And you can never really get your point across to a person until you learn how to communicate with him. And usually when people are sad, they don't do anything. They just cry over their condition. But when they get angry, they bring about a change. They bring about a change. When they get angry, they realize that the condition that they're in, that their suffering is unjust, immoral, illegal, and that anything that they do to correct it or eliminate it, they're justified. And when you and I develop that type of anger and speak in that voice, then we'll get some kind of respect and recognition and some changes from these people who have been promising us falsely already for far too long. So you have to speak their language. Was the language of brutality? Let's learn his language. If his language is with a shotgun, get a shotgun. His language, yes, I said. If he only understands the language of a rifle, get a rifle. If he only understands the language of a rope, get a rope. But don't waste time talking the wrong language to a man if you want to really communicate with him. Speak his language. And there's nothing wrong with that.